move to the third case this morning, Honaja versus Gonzalez.
May it please the court, and good morning. What's at issue today are two things. First is that the immigration judge erred when he misapplied the controlling case law with respect to the submission of fraudulent documents in an immigration proceeding. And second, that the IJ's adverse credibility finding is not based on substantial evidence. What's not in dispute today is that Mr. Hanai was stopped and tortured on three separate occasions, and his parents were murdered by the Serbian police on account of his ethnicity and his membership in the LDK. I'll first address the first issue. During the immigration proceedings, the immigration judge stated that the case Matter of OD controlled the issue of submission of false documents and credibility. The Matter of OD stands for the proposition that the submission of false documents can indicate an overall lack of credibility in the absence of rebuttal or explanation. In this case, we had both, and the IJ failed to address either of those in his opinion. First,
were both documents mailed from Kosovo?
The first document is the birth certificate, and that was received in the mail at Mr. Hanai's home. And the second document was the international driver's license, which Mr. Hanai went down to the local government office and received.
So he brought that with him when he came?
He had in his possession the international driver's license. The birth certificate was mailed to him from his uncle. Okay.
And did his uncle, just while we're on the subject, also mail the arrest? Was that the only thing his uncle mailed? Or did
No, he also mailed the arrest warrant that was left at the home after he fled.
Yeah.
The only issue raised by the allegation that these documents are false is that Mr. Hanai is not actually from Kosovo. He presented rebuttal evidence that he is from Kosovo. The first piece of rebuttal evidence is Ms. Kelly Maynard, a dialect expert in Albanian. She conducted an extensive analysis and determined that Mr. Hanai is from exactly where he says he's from, southern Kosovo, specifically Gjilan.
I wanted to ask you something about that because you argued that the government's expert testimony should not have been considered because it was unreliable under Daubert.
Correct.
But wouldn't that apply just as clearly to Ms. Maynard's testimony regarding the origin of his dialect?
Well, there are two things. First of all, the government certainly had the opportunity to raise an objection to the reliability of Ms. Maynard's expert testimony in her conclusions, and they failed to do so. So that's really not at issue here. And second of all, this was a distinctly different type of analysis that was done as opposed to Mr. Epstein's comparative document analysis.
Just as a follow-up, I was wondering if it's your contention that an immigration judge has to strictly apply the Daubert factors in every case in which there's expert testimony, because to my point of view, it really would not be in the interest of asylum applicants to require them to overcome strict evidentiary hurdles in presenting their asylum claims.
Well, there's two ways to answer that. And first is that every expert will be different, because as Ms. Professor Julie Mertes, she was an expert in something entirely different, a country conditions expert. So the type of scrutiny that she would be put under if challenged would be different than, say, someone of Mr. Epstein, who did a side-by-side scientific comparative analysis. So the Daubert factors can be applied depending on the type of expert that is presented. And while the Daubert test, the error rate, and the other tests in Daubert may not be strictly adhered to in immigration proceedings, there has to be some sort of indicia of reliability of the expert's report in order for it to be admitted and the IJ to base and rely on that opinion.
Well, that's sort of more in the direction that we've gone before, where this court has said, you know, even if, a Daubert-like analysis, I think it's really better thought of as a Rule 702-like analysis, since Daubert itself arose in the context of a highly scientific kind of inquiry, and the court later expanded it. But it's those ideas, really, a general sense of reliability, a general sense of testing, as opposed to just sort of anybody strolling in and saying, I know all about Albania or Kosovo or whatever they may say they know about. And so if somebody proffered as an expert doesn't have any knowledge, let's say, of the Albanian language, then why should you pay attention to what they say about the Albanian language? Just a more flexible, in keeping with the general administrative hearing rules.
Exactly. Exactly. That there had to be something applied by this judge so that there would be some indicia of reliability, and here there was none.
And suppose Mr. Epstein's testimony does satisfy that. What should we make of his criticisms? It's not every document he criticizes. It's only two.
Correct.
That he finds problematic, and the others he says, I really can't reach any conclusion about.
Correct.
Is it your position that the immigration judge may not then reject the rest of the applicant's testimony on credibility grounds based, or did he's got to find some materiality link somehow to the documents that were discredited? Or why shouldn't the immigration judge be able to say, if you lied about two documents, then you're out of here?
Well, there's several ways to respond to that. And the one is that is exactly what this judge did.
Right.
He said, false documents, adverse credibility. And he then ignored the entire rest of the record. There was a wealth of corroborating evidence presented by Mr. Hanai that overcame any allegation that these documents were false.
So are you arguing then that really it's his opinion that's insufficient? Because you're quite right that he does not lay out in this opinion, here are the things that I find problematic, here are the things that would support, this is why I've decided to give more weight to the problematic things and reject him, here's why I don't. You know, he doesn't give us any window into his thinking on all of that.
And that's correct, and that is a problem. And we shouldn't have to guess what the IJ was thinking, that he should have taken the time to say that he considered all this corroborating evidence. And moreover, that going to the Korski case, that he listened to Mr. Hanai's explanation and that Mr. Hanai did not know that these were false documents. In the absence of knowledge on part of the applicant, there can be no adverse credibility finding. And the IJ did not address Mr. Hanai's explanation whatsoever with respect to these documents. He simply looked at the report and based his entire opinion in finding on those two fraudulent documents and the unreliable.
At what point did the government request documents being examined by an expert?
This was after the initial hearing. At the initial hearing, Dr. Pat, Mr. Hanai's psychotherapist, testified, and then the documents were then sent into the government, into the forensic document laboratory for examination.
So the government heard the testimony. The government requested the documents.
That's correct. That's correct.
The hearings were spread out over a number of days throughout an entire year, wasn't it?
That's correct. The first hearing began on August 30, 2001. The last hearing took place, I believe, on April 16, 2002. There's a total of five hearings, I believe. If I can, I'd like to save some time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Turner.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jason Turner, and I represent the respondent, the Attorney General of the United States. The issue here is whether the record compels reversal of the immigration judge's adverse credibility determination.
Well, the IJ, of course, based his decision on the matter of OD and specifically relied on the proposition that documents determined to be forgeries undermine credibility not only as to identity or nationality, but as to the claim in its entirety. And it seems to me that we squarely rejected that that proposition in Korski.
Judge Rovner, I agree in part with you. He did rely upon the fact that the government had testimony that two of the documents were obvious counterfeits, but that was not all the judge relied upon. He also relied upon the numerous inconsistencies and implausibilities contained in the petitioner's testimony.
But they weren't. You're talking about the field, the asylum officer's interview. Those inconsistencies, to the extent they were, seem so trivial in light of the fact that one document that Mr. Epstein did not criticize was the arrest warrant.
He
says he can't draw a conclusion on it.
He did not draw an ultimate conclusion, but he did note that the document was lacking certain accent marks.
Right, and I'm looking at it, and it actually doesn't, you know, if you, at least according to what the Serbian language looks like on the government of Serbia's website, it appears that some of the typing doesn't, but the handwritten parts do have the diacritical markings. In any event, the expert doesn't flat out reject this, and on top of that, it shows that he's arrested for the precise offense that he says he's arrested for, being a political troublemaker.
The first mention of what this code mentioned in the arrest warrant was in the petitioner's reply brief.
No, the first mention is in his document here, 136/B. KZS. That's where it's mentioned. It's not
right.
Like
but
they
come
up.
But there's no mention of what, until the reply brief, what section
it's a,
is
it's a public code. Law. As you well know, under the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, courts are entitled to look at foreign laws, questions of law. We could do our own research if we
right.
wanted to. So I don't think there's any particular okay. problem with a law being mentioned.
But the lack of the accent marks alone caused bring it to some question, and there's also a problem.
But the partial lack. Pristina right. does have an accent mark on it.
And
do you happen to know, by the way, when Serbia changed from using the Cyrillic alphabet to the Roman alphabet?
No, I don't, Your Honor. I'm sorry. And there's also a problem with the fourth document he submitted, and although the government's expert didn't testify to it, that the problem with that was gleaned out in an earlier testimony, his LDK card, the secret political party he belongs
right, this
to.
Is just the year business where we have yeah. these various blank pages showing 93, 94, 95.
Right, he testified he joined in 1996, but the document states that it's valid from the years 1992 to 1995. And there's
right.
a further problem with that in that he gave...
So undercover organizations are supposed to have current booklets?
Well, I guess there's no absolute requirement, but he gave inconsistent explanations about why the dates didn't match up. Before the asylum officer, he stated that these membership cards were for keeping track of contributions, and as a member of the secret political society, he didn't have to give contributions. Later, he changes the story, or at least adds to it, and
you know
says they had to reuse old cards.
What you're saying might be what the immigration judge thought. But we have no idea, actually, what he thought, because there's so much evidence in the record that he yeah. never discusses.
Right. Well, that is, I mean, that's part of the issue. There is so much evidence.
Never discusses. Lots of evidence that's very favorable to Mr. Hanai.
He does. The petitioner testified for over 5 hours. His testimony stretches over 120 pages of the record. He had three other witnesses testify.
So
four individuals submitted affidavits.
That doesn't relieve immigration judges from the responsibility to listen to what's been
right.
said.
I don't think you can say he did not listen. He did listen.
How do we know? He never
he
tells us a word about what he thinks about this testimony.
Well, he did recount much of the testimony in his opinion, albeit not in the detail provided at trial, of course, or it would have been a three-volume opinion.
It goes on for two single-space pages.
What is so difficult in this case is that the inconsistencies that were, you know, recited the things that the IJ's opinion does cover concern largely insignificant details, matters that weren't at all central to the claim. And we've repeatedly held that adverse credibility determinations shouldn't be grounded in these trivial details and easily explain discrepancies, but have to be supported by very specific and cogent reasons that bear some legitimate nexus to the finding, and it just isn't here.
Well, would it have been better if the judge had done a better job of explaining? Yes, it would have made my job a lot easier. It would have made your job a lot easier. But I believe he did have enough detail in there. He cites the fraudulent documents, and he cites the inconsistent and implausible.
Think our job is pretty easy. I think it's yours that's really difficult.
Right.
When you have to come in here and defend this kind of stuff. And I'm telling you, my heart goes out to you.
Well, thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it. But if I may I go over some of the inconsistencies if we're done with the documents?
Let me ask you before you do that.
I'm done with my diatribe.
What about the physical evidence, the scarring, the medical testimony with regard to the beatings that he probably...
I'm not going to deny that there was no corroboration for the petitioner's testimony, but the question upon review is not...
That's right. So he gets the day of the driver's license off by 4 days, and... physicians in the United States who have examined him find scarring all over his body consistent with the beatings that he alleged that he received at the hands of the police.
And you have one of the finest psychiatrists in the Midwest.
If I can answer the first question first, I'll
repeat yourself. But I just want to add to your troubles.
Well, Judge Wood, the question isn't whether substantial evidence supports some elements of the petitioner's claim. It's whether substantial evidence supports the result.
It's whether we have
below.
A clue that the immigration judge even thought about the substantial evidence. If this hypothetical opinion that you would rather be standing here defending were there, and the immigration judge said, yes, I know he has scars all over his body, but it looks to me like he fell down the stairs or whatever. You know, I'm going to disregard this doctor because of this or this somebody else because of that. Then it seems to me you would be in a stronger position. As it is, there's strongly corroborating medical evidence of the kind that your office is constantly complaining doesn't exist, and in this case it does, and not a peep out of the immigration judge.
Well, I know. These scars range from size of 1 centimeter to 5 centimeter. I don't know.
Yeah, because they were beating him on his feet and on his head and everywhere else.
Well, I mean, like I said, it really comes down to the standard of review, and it's not whether substantial evidence does support it. I'm not going to deny that there is substantial evidence for elements of the petitioner's claim. The question is whether...
Right, the torture elements, the part that we don't have substantial evidence for...
There's inconsistencies with respect to the torture itself, and if I may, I'll jump to one of those.
Sure, go ahead.
The third and last beating, which occurred after the second traffic stop, he alleged that began on April 11th, 1997.
Right. This is the April 14th driver's license. Yeah.
No, well, the April 15th driver's license. And then the beating before that, this is the second such beating. He was chained to a wall, allegedly beaten all over his body with a stick and a whip, chained up to a chair and beaten on the bottom of his feet, allegedly, then placed in a salty cell with water to aggravate those wounds. He testified the first time it took him a month to recover. Yet after this second identical beating, he strolls into the government office to get his international driver's license on April 15th. That's just implausible.
Why is it implausible?
He said he couldn't get out of his couch for a full week the first time, and here he is walking. I mean, even if he could get up, that's not what I would think to do with myself, is to go get a new driver's license after such a beating.
People, if you think it's a way that can help you escape and it's part of an escape plan, people crawl to these places. People walk over thousands and thousands of miles of mountain terrain to get out of these places.
Granted, Your Honor, but there was no testimony that the acquiring of this license was some part of his escape plan. He testified that he got this license just in case he ever wanted to drive outside of Kosovo. And perhaps you could read through that and say maybe that's part of his plan, but he never came out and said it. And he had 5 hours to do so. And he had adequate, he was well represented, and surely if that was part of his plan, it would have come out. And we shouldn't be putting words into his mouth now.
Either way.
And if I could just, Your Honors, turn to some of his explanations and excuses. I think they're important. He's tried to explain away many of these problems all through the proceedings, but his efforts only underscore the fact that there is substantial evidence supporting the immigration judge's adverse credibility finding. In his opening brief, the petitioner states, quote, "It is possible that the Serbian government intentionally gave faulty documents to ethnic Albanians as a pretext to harass them," end quote. That's page 31 of his brief. Regarding which driver's license he showed the authorities during his second traffic stop, he claims that he, quote, "could have been legitimately confused when he spoke to the asylum officer," page 37. Regarding his changed story concerning how he entered the U.S., Petitioner states that, quote, it is very likely, end quote, that the asylum officer misunderstood him, page 41. But possibilities, could have beens, and likelihoods are not enough to compel reversal of the adverse credibility finding reached below, and therefore, this court should deny the petition for review.
Thank you, counsel.
You're welcome.
You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. I'll just take a moment. Government focused quite a bit on the other inconsistencies and implausibilities that the IJ noted were cited above or elsewhere. This court is correct that there were no specific instances by the IJ pointed to in his opinion. We can assume that he was referring to the INS officer's inconsistencies from her 1 to 1.5 hour interview conducted through a translator. We can assume that those are the inconsistencies, but we shouldn't have to assume. It was the IJ's job to tell us what he was relying on, and he didn't. The other inconsistencies, the date of the driver's license and the beating that the government just talked to you about, this is a blatant attempt by the government to try to bolster at the 11th hour the IJ's deficient opinion. They shouldn't be allowed to do it. There was a mountain of corroborating evidence. She said the physical scars, the diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder by 2 experts, his brother's own affidavit stating that he was born in Kosovo, that they were members of the LDK. He's been granted asylum in England. Professor Julie Mertes saying that these were consistent, the beatings were consistent with what she knew to be happening in Kosovo. She's an expert on Kosovo. All of this amounted to substantial evidence. No reasonable fact finder could have found contrary. We ask this court to grant the petition for review. Thank you.
Thank you. Case will be taken under advisement.